Hello, I'm Roya.
I'm Mary.
And welcome to our podcast.
We will be analyzing the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock by T.S. Eliot. But first we're going to read you the poem.
C.O. Credes, Chi Mia Risposta Fosse. A persona que me tornasi al mondo. Chiesta fiamma staria senza più scos. Ma per chioch giamadi questo fondo. Non torno vivo alcun, siota il vero, senza tema de infiamia ti risponda.
Okay, so obviously that's in a different language, and we'll get to what it means later. So now I'm going to read you the poem.
It's a surprise.
It's a surprise. Okay, let us go then, you and I, when the evening is spread out against the sky, like a patient etherized upon a table, let us go through certain half-deserted streets, the muttering retreats of restless nights in one-night cheap hotels, and sawdust restaurants with oyster shells, streets that follow like a tedious argument of insidious intent, to lead you to an overwhelming question. Oh, do not ask, what is it? Let us go and make our visit. In the room, the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo. The yellow fog that rubs its back upon the window panes, the yellow smoke that rubs its muzzle on the window panes, licked its tongue into the corners of the evening, lingered upon the pools that stand in drains, let fall upon its back the soot that falls from chimneys, slipped by the terrace, made a sudden leap, and seeing that it was a soft October night, curled once about the house and fell asleep. And indeed there will be a time for the yellow smoke that slides along the street, rubbing its back upon the window panes. There will be a time to prepare a face to meet the faces that you meet. There will be a time to murder and create, and time for all the works of, and days of hands that lift and drop a question on your plate. Time for you and time for me, and time yet for 100 indecisions, and for 100 visions and revisions before the taking of a toast and tea. In the room, the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo. And indeed, there will be time to wonder, do I dare and do I dare? Time to turn back and descend the stair with a bald spot in the middle of my hair. They will say, how his hair is growing thin. My morning coat, my collar mounting firmly to the chin, my necktie rich and modest, but asserted by a simple pin. They will say, but how his arms and legs are thin. Do I dare disturb the universe? In a minute there is time for decisions and revisions which a minute will reverse. For I have known them all already. None them all have known the evenings, mornings, afternoons. I have measured out my life with coffee spoons. I know the voices dying with a dying fall beneath the music from a farther room. So how should I presume?
Yeah. And I have known the eyes already. Known them all. The eyes that fix you in a formulated phrase. And when I am formulated, sprawling on a pen, when I am pinned and wriggling on the wall, then how should I begin to spit out all the butt ends of my days and ways? How should I presume? And I have known the arms already, known them all, arms that are braceleted and white and bare, but in the lamplight downed with light brown hair. Is it perfume for a dress that makes me so distressed? Arms that lie along a table or wrap about a shawl, and should I then presume, and how should I begin? Shall I say I have gone at dusk through narrow streets and watch the smoke that rises from the pipes of lonely men in shirt sleeves leaning out of windows. I should have been a pair of ragged claws scuttling across the floors of silent seas. In the afternoon, the evening sleeps so peacefully, smoothed by long fingers, asleep, tired, or it malingers. Stretched on the floor here beside you and me, Should I, after tea and cakes and ices, have the strength to force the moment to its crisis? But though I have wept and fasted, wept and prayed, though I have seen my head grown slightly bald, brought in upon a platter, I am no prophet, and here's no great matter. I have seen the moment of my greatness flicker, and I have seen the eternal footman hold my coat and snicker, and in short, I was afraid. And it would have been worth it, after all, if the cups, the marmalade, the tea, among the porcelain, among some talk of you and me, would it have been worth the while? To have bitten off the matter with a smile, to have squeezed the universe into a ball, to roll it towards some overwhelming question, to say, I am Lazarus, come from the dead, come back to tell you all, I shall tell you all, if one settling a pillow by her head should say, that is not what I meant at all, that is not it at all. And it would it have been worth it, after all, would it have been worth while, after the sun sets in the dooryards, in the sprinkled streets, in the novels, after the teacups, after the skirts that trail along the floor, in this, and so much more. It is impossible to say just what I mean, but as if a magical lantern threw the nerves in a pattern on a screen, would it have been worthwhile if one settling a pillow, or throwing off a shawl, and turning toward the window should say, that is not it at all, that is not what I meant at all. No, I am not Prince Hamlet, nor was meant to be. I am an attendant lord, one that will do, to swell a progress, start a scene or two. Advise the prince, no doubt, an easy tool, deferential, glad to be of use, political, cautious, and meticulous, full of high sentence, but a bit of obtuse, at times, indeed, almost ridiculous, almost at times the fool. I grow old, I grow old. Shall I part my hair behind? Do I dare to eat a peach? I shall wear white flannel trousers and walk upon the beach. I have heard the mermaids singing each to each. I do not think that they will sing to me. I have seen them riding seaward on the waves, combining the white hair of the waves blown black back. When the wind blows, the water white and black. We have lingered in the chambers of the sea by sea girls, wreathed and seaweed red and brown, till human voices wake us and we drown. So there's the poem. And we read that because we feel like it was necessary for you to hear it for our analysis.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess we'll get back to the different language. So obviously, we didn't know what it meant. So I copied and pasted it into the computer. And I found that it was from Dante Alighieri's Inferno, and it means, if I but thought that my response were made to one perhaps returning to the world, this tongue of flame would cease to flicker. But since up from these depths no one has yet returned alive, if what I hear is true, I answer without fear of being shamed. And hold on. It seems that's when he's like stuck between heaven and hell. So it seems as if like our guy, J. Alfred Prufrock, is stuck between heaven and hell, and he is feeling very lonely, and he's just reflecting on all the things he can see. Roya, I'd like to chime in about our man.
Okay. So J. Alfred Prufrock is like, he's getting older, and so like now he's starting to like realize and like take in the fact that he's getting older, and so that's like when he talks about how he measures his life in coffee spoons, and how he like is starting to turn thin. And how he's, like, losing his hair. And so, basically, like, he's saying that he's due for, like, an upgrade, kind of. So, like, he wants to, like, refresh. But he doesn't know, like, where to begin. So, he's, like, stuck.
So, even though he's stuck and doesn't know where to start, he still wants to, like, make his mark on the world. Even though he's, like, getting older. Like, in the line where he asks, do I dare disturb the universe? He seems nervous, like he doesn't know what to do. He lacks confidence in himself, and even though he's intelligent, he doesn't have trust in himself or anything and anyone around him, so he doesn't really know what to do, and he's in this isolated place where he's just stuck, kind of like a purgatory.
So just to give you like a quick rundown of like the love song of J. Alfred Pre-Talk, like just some like technical things. The poem in itself is 131 lines long, and like the rhyme scheme's pretty loose, meaning that there's no like consistent rhyme scheme throughout the poem, and there was no like regular pattern to the rhymes. Like, it was kind of just like dispersed and scattered, which is, I guess, just how T.S. Eliot felt like he wanted to write this poem, to like bring a better emphasis onto like what he was trying to get at.
T.S. Eliot really believed in using traditional and innovative poetic techniques, which is why he used such loose iambic pentameter, tetrameter, and trimeter to like really get the effect on this poem, like the full effect.
And like it helps like keep the poem like flowing smoothly. So like I said, like I guess that's just like the best way he thought that he would like get the point across of this poem.
The shifting and repetitive aspect of the poem is like a parody of a love song. How it like flows really good at some parts, but then it kind of stumbles and stutters and just kind of hesitates its way through like the life of an older man who can't decide what to do right now. How he's just so lonely and isolated in the world. Like, he can't decide if he wants to go out and like find the love of his life, or if he's too scared, and like it's now or never for him, since he's like in life or death situation kinda.
And like, although his like rhyming was so scattered and stuff, there were like specific lines that were like kind of together, I guess, and they were the ones that were like dare and hair, and like when the people stared or whatever, like those rhymed. And then like I guess most of the poem had like a pretty good rhyme scheme. It just wasn't like every single line, you know. So T.S. Eliot used like quite a like few different like themes throughout this poem, and so some of the ones that we found were love and loneliness,
society and relationship,
and like time, because it's like I guess like the time kind of just caught up on him, so I felt like that was a good one. And I guess you might be able to throw like the old man's mental stability in there, because like I don't know, I just feel like his mental capacity is kind of just fading away because he's old now.
And so, isolation was a pretty big theme too. I guess that kind of ties in with loneliness.
Yeah, those kind of go together. And then love and relationships kind of like goes together. And like I also kind of found like society to be a good theme, because I don't know, like he was talking about how the people stared, and like people focus so much on how society sees them that like it like affects how they see themselves.
Because he worried about like what the people thought of him getting older, and he questioned himself so much, and he was like, what are people going to say about me? Are they going to talk about like my thin arms or how my hair is falling out? Like, he worried so much, and that's where his mental stability comes in, like where you worry about if he's okay or not.
Yeah, that was, like, a huge deal to him. And, like, he felt real lonely, and, like, society can, like, because society's like, hey, well, you should have this person, or you should know this person. Like, if you don't, like, I feel like that can kind of have, like, an effect on, like, how you're, like, how lonely you feel, or how your mental stability is. Because, like, if you're so, like, wishy-washy about yourself, it just, like, hurts your mental health. T.S. Eliot used, like, he had a good use of personification in this poem on, like, several lines. So Mary's going to read those specific lines and, like, give you a background about them.
In lines 15 through 22, there were strong repeated rhyme and assonance
to, like, further make the poem better. So I'll just go ahead and read them. The yellow fog that rubs its back upon the window panes, the yellow smoke that rubs its muzzle on the window panes, licked its tongue into the corners of the evening, lingered upon the pools that stand in drains, let fall upon its back the soot that falls from chimneys, slipped by the terrace, made a sudden leap, and seeing that it was a soft October night, curled once about the house and fell asleep. T.S. Eliot had really good use of personification. Like, obviously, fog doesn't have a back. It's not going to rub on the window pane.
He really just, like, he used that to help, like, his audience focus in on exactly, like, what was happening and, like, what,
he made it clear, like, what it looked like that night.
Yeah. So, like, he had a good use of, like, it was real easy. Like, you could just read it and then close your eyes and just, like, picture it, which was, like, good as an author. So, I felt like
imagery
that was good.
And, like, personification go hand in hand.
Yeah, it's, like, a big deal. So, it's almost as if Proof Rock basically just, like, it's almost like he just hates himself, like, he just, like, he's gotten to the point where he's just beating himself up so much that, like, he just has so much, like, self-hatred. And, like, his self-esteem's just real low and down. And, like, that's, I guess that's where, like, his loneliness comes in and, like, his self-hatred and mental stability and stuff. Like, T.S. Eliot made use of his good themes and stuff. So, like we were just talking about with the personification, he also managed to use good imagery in lines 57 through 61, and that's when he, the old man compared himself to an insect that was pinned and wriggling on the wall, and then also again in lines 73 and 74, where the old man sees himself as a lowly crustacean on the seafloor. Like, if you're, like, if you, like, love yourself and you, like, love how you are, you would not compare yourself to, like, an insect or anything on the bottom of the ocean. Because, like, when you think about the bottom of the ocean, you think of, like, nasty, dark creatures that, like, don't even get any sunlight. So they're, like, black and stuff and just, like, nasty. So, like, it's just not good to compare yourself to that, which is why I think that he had, like, a lot of self-hatred built up. And so, like, that was just, like, a good way of using, like, imagery because you can literally picture that. So when you think about, like, those nasty, like an insect, like, just think about, like, a roach or something crawling, like, on the wall. Like, that's just, like, that makes you want to, like, kill it. Like, why would anyone, like, why would you want to be around that, you know?
I think that Proof Rock is, like, has a huge fear of rejection. Like, he doesn't want anybody to not like him. He doesn't want to go out in society and, like, have people hate on him. Like, while he thinks so low of himself, like, it's just going to bring his self-esteem down more. And so, he can't even make himself talk to people or, like, find the love of his life. He can't even eat a peach without questioning himself.
And that takes us back to, like, the theme of isolation because, like, if he's too scared to, like, go out and do things, he's just going to isolate himself, and that's just going to, like, make him beat up on himself more. And, like, I think that's why he's, like, so hard on himself and why he thinks so bad of himself is because, like, he's not happy with himself, so he just feels like other people are going to, like, view him the same way that he does. Something that we forgot to mention earlier is that this poem is a form of a dramatic monologue, which is something that Eliot used a lot. Like, that was a type of poem that he chose to, like, base all his, like, writing on and stuff. So, basically it's a dramatic monologue because
it's, like, this middle-aged man is, like, giving all his thoughts about himself and about how he wants to go out into the world or make his mark on the world. It's just all of his thoughts to form the poem.
So towards the end of the poem, Prufrock or Elliot says the line, "No, I'm not Prince Hamlet, nor was meant to be. And an attendant lord, one that will do, to swell progress, start a scene or two, advise the prince, no doubt an easy tool, deferential, glad to be of use, political, cautious, and meticulous, full of high sentence, but a bit of obtuse, at times indeed almost ridiculous, almost at times a fool." So really you didn't have to hear the whole thing just for me to talk about the first line, but it's okay. So basically, Prufrock is just, like, he's comparing himself to Prince Hamlet. And so basically he's saying that, like, he might not be very useful, like, right now. But like, he might be useful as someone to, like, go out and, like, help somebody. Or, like, be a servant or, like, an attendant, I think. It's like, that's what he said. Like, it's almost like, it kind of just makes me think that, like, he's trying to, like, give himself, like, he's saying that he's no prince, but he did say that he could be, like, an attendant. So, like, I feel like he's trying to, like, hype himself up a little bit, but he's just, like, always beat himself down. So, like, he's trying to do it and almost, like, hello? Okay, we're back on now. Sorry. Had an interruption. Moving on.
I don't even remember what
you were talking about. Yeah, so what I was just talking about was how he is no Hamlet. So we're going to move on now. Continue to discuss our poem. So we're going to go back and probably do a little bit of, like,
summarizing.
Well, we're going to do... And we're back after another interruption. Moving on. We're going to do another quick little summary, like I just said, just because we kind of failed to do that at the beginning, but it's fine. So basically, the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock was one of T.S. Eliot's, like, earliest poems. It was considered to be one of his, like, major pieces of work. It was completed in 1910 or 1911, but it was never published until 1915.
Not ready yet.
We need to take a short break. We'll be right back. So basically, oh, we're back. Hello.
Let me do this
part. It's me.
I got this.
Okay, Mary's going to take this one over for us.
Okay. This poem, you know, like we said earlier, monologue, is, like, Prufrock is kind of addressing a potential lover, like, the potential love of his life, who he would like to, you know, spend time with.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink. But he knows better than to approach a woman. And, like, in his mind, he hears the comments that others make about his appearance. And, like, all the stuff that he thinks is wrong with him.
We're going to take another quick break.
Another interruption.
Okay, we're back. Sorry for another interruption.
Same interruption three times.
Three times, it's fun. Okay. Shout out.
So, he hears the comments that people make about, like, the things that he thinks is wrong with him. And, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't mean to cut that off, sorry. Yeah, but basically, sorry, I'm out of breath, I was running. I've lost my train of thought, hold on. So, Prufrock's, like, obviously, like, pretty smart, because, like, he used some pretty big words in that poem. I mean, really, no Mr. Peterson words, but, like, it's probably a close second, but, you know, nobody's like you, Pete Dog. Wink, wink. Shout out, hurt you, man. But yeah, like, he was, like, smart and I'm stretching, and he was just kind of emotional, and I'd say that he was, like, kind of sweet, but, like, it just makes you real sad because I just picture this cute old guy who's just, like, eating in a restaurant by himself because he's so depressed. And, like, he's just lonely, you know? Like,
all he wants is love. I know. And he's just so worried to go out and get it. And his anxiety just overwhelms him so bad that he just isolates himself and just won't go for it.
It's honestly so sad. And, like, if I could meet J. Alfred Prufrock, I would just kiss his little cheeks and just and hold him and let him know that he's precious.
And I would tell him that his thin arms are amazing because I have thin arms too. And even though he is going a little bit bald, people love bald. Bald is beautiful.
I mean, I have a pretty small forehead, but some people have big foreheads with receding hairlines. So there's nothing wrong with being bald.
And you know what else I would tell him? I would say, it's okay to eat a peach. Because I'll eat a peach with you.
And I love peaches, so I would eat one too.
I do too.
We could have a three-eater peach day. Peaches to beaches, whatever it's called. But yeah, so now we're going to hopefully be wrapping this thing up in the next couple minutes.
The next 4 minutes and...
And we've really enjoyed being with this podcast today.
You know, honestly, I didn't think we could do it.
I felt like we had pretty good analysis, Mr. Peterson, if I could toot my own horn. But anyways, we're going to take a short break, so BRB. So, J. Alfred Prufrock never actually, achieves any answers to all of these overwhelming questions that he keeps posing in his head. But really and truly, they're not that overwhelming, but he's just so mentally, unstable that, like we've said before, he's just really beating himself up and, it's honestly just ridiculous. And I think it just, I think it's kind of, affecting him and his behavior and, how he sees himself because he can't find the answers. And, I don't think the answers are out there. Personally, I just don't think that he's ever going to find them.
And then the repetitive line about how the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo. He really wants to go over there and talk with them because he keeps bringing them up so much. But he feels so self-conscious of his, thin and balding appearance. So.
And, you know, Michelangelo is an artist, so he paints and stuff. So.
Pretty sure Mr. Peterson knew that.
So he's the real deal, you know. So,
Prufrock is just lost in thought. He doesn't know where to go. He's just kind of stuck in the middle. And he feels just unable to express the nature of his crisis or his question.
Which, those are the unanswered questions that we just discussed. Mary just wanted to touch on those one more time.
Yeah. Oh, wait, here. We never talked about the very end of the poem. At the very end of the poem, Prufrock imagines himself strolling down a beach, listening to the mermaids singing, and then he wonders if the mermaids will sing to him.
And you know,
but they won't.
Whenever I read that line, I thought of, "Oh brother, where art thou?"
I thought of the sirens,
like the bad mermaids who take you in and. Yeah.
Yeah, he said he could hear them singing, but they weren't singing to him, and that's where his self-conscious mindset comes in. He thinks even the little mermaids in his dream couldn't sing to him.
Yeah, and, that's just sad because, the sirens, they sing to everybody, and they want your attention and your love and your everything. And even if he was just thinking of mythology and was singing to the sirens, he would have gotten some attention. You know what I'm saying? So these must be some mean mermaids to just not show him any love.
Okay, we have one more minute left. And in this short minute, I'm going to talk about what I think the message of the poem was. What J. Alfred Prufrock is trying to say.
And we came up with this together, just so everybody knows, just to have clarity.
Clarity. Okay. I think that the point of the poem was to get across the message that, no matter what kind of life we live or lead, we might question ourselves and, like, just, we might not feel up to, you know, what's...
Like society standards.
Up to society standards. And we might just question ourselves and doubt ourselves. But even though we're doing all that and just kind of putting ourselves down, we should, like, dare to invite other people to share our lives with us and have fun with them.
So, like, even if you're scared of rejection or you, like, take what people think about you to heart, like, just be confident in yourself and, like, don't be afraid to, like, try and make new friends. And I think that was Proof Rock's problem is he just had no confidence. And so that was why he was, like, unable to step out of his comfort zone and try to invite people into his life.
So if you're listening to our podcast, take a risk. Put yourself out there and make some friends.
And really, I kind of wish we would have said that in the beginning because most people aren't going to want to listen to a 30-minute podcast.
Just to get honestly. One simple little message. So, just skip to the end.
Yeah, honestly, if I could go back and add something to the beginning, but I don't want to because
this
that
would be it.
That ruins the whole point of the podcast, don't you think? But if I were to redo this podcast, I think I would put that in the front because I thought that's something that
I
people
that
need
really,
to hear.
And it would get your attention.
Yeah, really. I mean, that's like an attention grabber right there. Like,
so, Mr. Peterson, if you do decide to play this for the class, will you just skip to like the 29-minute mark for us? Because I think that was the best part of our whole
podcast.
Yeah,
really. I mean,
so that's a message to you, Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Peterson, we just want to say thank you for giving us this opportunity to make a podcast. And we appreciate all that you do for us in the classroom. And I pray that you never feel like J. Alfred Prufrock.
Just eat a peach.
And don't be afraid to make friends, because me and Mary will always be your friend.
Always.
And
go tennis.
Go tennis, go one act, go literary, go crusaders for life. You know what I'm saying? So, I'm Roya.
And I'm Mary.
And
that we're ending our podcast.
Was our podcast. Yay. We're signing off.